Welcome to the Doctor Connect podcast, your one-stop destination on the groundbreaking intersection of your passion and career. Join us for insightful conversations to discover innovative ways to help you build wealth, amplify your brand, and find the ultimate fulfillment in your personal and professional life. Hosted by medical oncologist Dr. Lute Miller-Schaefer, each episode features impactful interviews with top physicians, business leaders, authors, and entrepreneurs. This podcast is your profitable, passion-fueled platform. To learn more or to connect with Dr. Schaefer, email info@thedoctorconnect.com. You can also follow her on social media. Visit thedoctorconnect.com and take an assessment to discover if you are in alignment with your passion and expertise. Now, please welcome your host, Dr. Lute Miller-Schaefer.
Welcome to the Dr. Connect Show, the one-stop destination on the groundbreaking intersection of your passion and career. Join us on insightful discussions, inspired conversations on how to combine your passion, hobby with expertise and create a fulfillment and grow income. Welcome, Dr. Adler.
Thank you very much, Dr. Schaefer. It's nice to be here.
We are so excited to have this conversation today because this has been a topic that in a lot of people causing a lot of trouble. And before we dive in that important topic, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I grew up in the New York area. I live in the greater Boston area now, but New York really feels like home to me. Finding free time can be hard, but I've become very passionate about gardening. I also love to run and read, and I work as an anesthesiologist and interventional pain specialist.
So working in the medical, in the healthcare system right now, it requires a lot of different reshape, what I call. Obviously, it's not the same that it has been, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago. And we found out on daily practice that we're really having very different approach in terms of insurance companies' coverage. And one thing that I've learned about you, the question is alternative pain management, and you are taking care of the pain. Why haven't more insurance companies actually embraced alternative pain management therapies?
Yeah, so I think one is that it takes time for insurance companies to make changes. So one issue here is that alternative therapies have only really been accepted recently as an integral part of providing care to a whole person, even by physicians. I think the bigger issue, though, is that it is hard to provide the same type of scientific evidence that you can say provide for, say, a cardiac surgery for a modality like acupuncture or pain-focused brain therapies. Some of these therapies just don't easily fit into our traditional research paradigms, which makes it even harder to gain acceptance from the people who actually pay for healthcare.
So can you tell us why you were actually involved in alternative therapies in the first place? You know that right now what we actually learn, it's a lot of patients do use it, but when they come to see us physicians, they actually afraid to bring up to the doctor that they are using alternative management. How were you involved in the first place?
Great question. So I actually became involved in some of these alternative therapies, everything from acupuncture to pain psychology, through my own experiences with pain. That's how I learned that these things actually work, not only in addition to, but in complement to traditional Western techniques. So I really encourage my patients to bring these up, ask questions about them. I want them to be a part of our conversation. I don't want patients to feel shy to discuss these because they can often be really helpful.
Can you give us one example, maybe one patient or one situation where, you know, that conversation maybe took a turn that you did not expect?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've had patients recently tell me actually perhaps a turn for the worse that they've tried a therapy that's local to our area. It wasn't really clear to me what the therapy was. It involved some sort of electricity and borrowing from maybe some chiropractic, some acupuncture. And I think the patient actually got a lot worse with the therapy, and the patient was getting worse, and I didn't know what was going on because I didn't think anything we were doing was causing a problem. And the patient actually finally brought it up to me, and I wish he had brought it up sooner because we could have talked through some of what was going on and I actually could have given him advice on it. But he said to me, honestly, I was embarrassed. I didn't think he would take me seriously. And I got the sense that he thought that I wouldn't take his pain complaint seriously if he told me that he was doing something alternative. So that's made me change my practice by at first appointments with patients actually saying that I engage in all sorts of therapies. I want to hear about everything you're doing. I want us to have an open line of communication because I think that's the best way I can help people and also protect people.
So if you're taking care of patients and, you know, we are seeing patients on a daily basis, then if patients hesitant to bring about this and discuss alternative measures, how do you think, you know, policymakers, insurance companies, all other organizations, everyone else who involved in healthcare, what do you think? Do they see barrier? Do you think that's also part of the problem?
Well, I think, you know, one thing is that there's a lack of traditional scientific evidence for some of these therapies. Things like acupuncture, for example, it's really hard to study them in the way we would study, you know, an antidepressant. So one thing is actually finding evidence for this that is compelling to an insurance company. And I think another major barrier with some of these services is figuring out what things really cost. Because, you know, if insurance companies and physicians don't agree on what a quote unquote fair price is for these services, many practitioners won't offer them, they won't be covered by insurance. And not only accessibility is reduced, but also I think the validity and safety of these therapies is reduced.
So if non-traditional, you know, therapies have not been investigated in randomized clinical trials, where do you think actually we are heading? What do you think the future? What's the next step?
So, you know, I think that traditionally we look for randomized controlled trials as sort of proof of efficacy, right? And I think it's definitely an important part of the conversation. But I think with some alternative therapies, another thing to keep in mind is safety, right? And things like acupuncture, things like pain-focused brain therapies, pain psychology, you may not always be able to prove efficacy, but we know they're safe and we know that they help patients. And I think also going by what larger groups of patients say, surveying patients is another way to get evidence for efficacy of these things. I think we can't always have evidence for everything, unfortunately. One day we may figure out how to study things like acupuncture, but right now we don't know how, but we do know from a lot of patients and many of us know from our own experiences that they help. So I would encourage insurance companies and other providers to support these therapies and at least investigate providing coverage for them.
And obviously, as we use more alternative therapies, and that right now we all know it's a mental health pandemic. And do you think, are we sidelining the importance of mental health and non-traditional therapies in our health insurance paradigm?
Yeah, absolutely. So as an example, I practice in a city called Lowell, and I would say there are at most a handful of psychiatrists and psychologists who take all insurances. And that's for a city with a population of 100,000 or more people, 34% of whom are on Medicaid. I would say that insurance companies aren't solely to blame here. We just don't value mental health care the way we value other types of medical services, like a state-of-the-art surgical intervention. However, a big problem I see is that insurance companies will pay for very, very expensive surgeries, like say a gastric bypass. But if basal mental health services are not covered, the long-term success of those interventions may be really threatened, which ends up spending a lot of money without a good outcome, truthfully.
So if we have this problem and in the world where we are really informed about every single decision from, you know, what we eat, where we travel, what we do on a daily basis, why are so many left in the dark about our own health insurance?
You know, I wish I had a one-line answer to this question, but I think truthfully, even if, as a physician, I feel like I am in the dark sometimes when I deal with health insurance companies. There's just not that much transparency, and what we need is transparency. I'd say that much of the documentation for their policies is extremely long. It's complex. It's not standardized. And just because you understand one insurance plan does not mean you will understand another. The rules change all the time. They can be arbitrary. And I think you have to remember that many insurance companies are businesses. They need to make money as a business does. But in essence, there's a financial incentive here to keep people in the dark. And I think that's really what the problem is.
So when it comes to the patient, we can take, you know, one situation. For example, sometimes one medication would be approved by one insurance company, but not another insurance company. But then the patients actually expect for us physicians, when they come and they have communication with us, actually, they have a trust in us. And it's very difficult, for example, for me to explain why this medication will be covered, but not this one. Why first we need to do, let's say, CT scan, and then, for example, PET scan. So when it comes to patients' health, our own health, patients trust physicians on the final say, but sometimes it's actually not up to us. Can you share what your thoughts and what your experience about this?
Yeah, so I think especially with differential coverage between insurers, I think we have to just be honest with patients. I think it's important that patients and other consumers of healthcare be aware that there are more and more restrictions placed on what doctors can do. And even when as physicians, we want to do the right thing, we want to prescribe one medication over another, our hands can be tied. And I think it's also on us to be honest with patients and say, you know, this is the study I want to get for you. This is the medication I want to get for you. Unfortunately, your insurance company requires that we do this other step. And then we can make a decision together with the patient whether we try that step or whether, for example, as a physician, we write to the insurance company and we say, you know, I don't think that this first step is necessary. I think we need to offer Mr. X this study first. Sometimes appealing as a physician, as a patient to an insurance company can help patients get the care that you recommend.
So do you think the physicians and hospitals truly in control to select certain treatment procedures, let's say alternative or not? Who actually, when it comes to the patient, when we sit in front of the patient and we look in the eyes and there is a whole trust, so are physicians truly in control?
You know, sometimes we are and sometimes we're not. And I would say, you know, in my area of medicine, pain medicine, that this is increasingly a problem. And I'll give you an example that's, it's not a life-threatening example, but it's, I think it's very telling, which is that I saw a gentleman the other week and he's had back pain for 20 years. And I really think he needs to get an MRI. He hasn't had one for many, many years. And the back pain's gotten worse and worse. And his insurance company requires 6 weeks of physical therapy in the last 6 months before getting an MRI, which is all well and fine, but he's done physical therapy almost every year for the past 5 years. So I wrote a letter to his insurance company after they denied it, saying, you know, it's not worth the money. It's not medically necessary for this gentleman to do physical therapy yet again, when nothing's really changed. And I had a conversation with a peer-to-peer reviewer on the phone, and they said to me, you know, that's just our policy. And it's really sad because this gentleman's going to waste time. He's going to waste money. He's going to be out of work sometimes because he has to go to physical therapy just to get an MRI. I feel powerless in this situation. And I shared that with him.
So when we get, let's say, for review, and actually, thank you for sharing that experience, because this is one out of million examples. And we also have all the time, for example, it require first, you know, CT scan, although the other MRI would be better test in a certain situation, and maybe vice versa. And a lot of times it's like extra expenses and, you know, time wasting and, you know, more frustration, more appointments, more phone calls. You know, it also involves additional supported personnel. So what are some key maybe insurance terms that every patient should know? And how can we more clear understand so then we can empower the patient's community?
Yeah, so I don't think I've ever had a doctor talk to me about insurance. And I have actually started trying to briefly explain to patients or giving them a handout. And I think some things patients should understand is that many people pay a yearly fee for their insurance company, but that's not the only fee that they have. So they're going to have a copay when they see many physicians. That's a fixed amount that a patient has to pay for a service covered by their insurance. many patients have a deductible, which is an amount of money that a patient has to pay before their insurance starts covering or fully covering covered expenses. And it's important to know what your deductible is before you choose a insurance plan, because deductibles now can be thousands of dollars, sometimes $8,000 or $9,000. So imagine you're already paying for insurance and surprise, now you have an $8,000 or $9,000 bill from your care, and that's your deductible. Patients can be their own advocate. They can find out about these amounts of money simply by calling their insurance company. In addition, patients should understand that if their insurance company denies a recommended treatment, they can actually appeal directly to their insurance company and often reverse this decision. Patients have the right to appeal, and insurance often listens to patients more than they listen to doctors. And that's something I tell patients in the case of a denial, that I'm going to reach out, but you should reach out too. And if you want to learn more, the National Patient Advocate Foundation is a really great resource that details some of these costs, some of these terms about insurance, and helps you learn about them in a simple way.
So this is from the patient perspective. And how about from the physician's perspective, or maybe medical personnel? And right now, more and more physicians opening also private practices. Some of them open coaching businesses. Some of them, you know, do an additional, what we call side gigs, and try to help patients in the other way. What message would you give maybe to the healthcare providers or physicians and other medical personnel?
I suppose I would say as a physician, you really also need to educate yourself about your patient population, about insurances in your area, because local coverage determinations really vary by state to state. And I think the way you can be the best advocate for your patient is actually understanding some of these things. And I think just like patients don't always understand the particularities of insurance, physicians don't either. We're not taught this in medical school. We're not taught this in residency. So how do you learn? And I think you learn the same way patients learn, which is by doing your research, doing your homework, and making sure that you're educated so you can share that education with patients.
So looking forward, do you think maybe we can create certain services or maybe certain department or something like maybe a liaison? Or looking forward, how do you see that relationship between insurance companies, physicians and patients, you know, all together, and maybe investors? I don't know.
So I think the relationship's strained, and I think we're at a tipping point. You know, most of us became physicians because we love working with people. We want to help people. But when more and more time is spent filling out forms and arguing with insurance companies to get paid for services that we've actually already spent time providing, it's hard. I think hospitals actually do have some of these services. There are often people in an office or at a big hospital campus that understand the particularities of insurance companies and actually are a resource. They're not advertised, though. And I think something we could do on the healthcare end is advertise these people, these services, and make sure that there are resources for patients, not only to receive care at your institution, but also to be empowered to receive that care and understand not only the health consequences, but to be realistic, the financial consequences.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. We should find a little bit more, be aware of those additional services, so then not all burden placed on one patient encounter. Also, I was just listening to you and thinking, and maybe someone has also questioned in the audience, when the patient comes to see the physician, there's so many other things involved. Their schedule needs to be done. Their, you know, the family members, their social, the financial, the medical, the toxicity, the side effect. There are so many other aspects. But for the physician, that precious 10-15 minutes encounter, and that is very narrow time. During this time, we have to do everything. An insurance company, it's only one part. But a medical documentation, seeing patient, arrange everything else, and also keep up with the continuous medical education, board certification, and on and on and on. And we're not even talking about the family and children and friends and anything else. And that's where the question came, that do we really call it physician burnout? And physician burnout has been a reality. But for me personally, I don't think it's for physicians to me, it seems like the organization who actually put physicians in this place. So why are we putting this on physicians if they do so much diligent work, so much study, and it's not, it's actually very sturdy people? Can you share what's your aspect?
So you're right. It's basically system burnout. It's not physician burnout. And if you go around a hospital, I mean, you'll see front desk staff, greeters, nurses, physicians, everyone could answer yes to a survey about burnout. And it's a system-wide dysfunction. And I think, honestly, that there's something about physicians that we take on all the burden. We think it's all our burden, the patients, the patients' calls, the calls overnight, it's all our burden. And it doesn't have to be, but we have to advocate for ourselves. And we need to say it's too much, that if I have 15 minutes for a visit, I need to talk to the patient about the medicine and about the care plan and make sure that the patient's educated about that. I may not have time to educate them about everything else. I need other resources to do my job. And hospitals need to pay for that. And the system needs to pay for that. And that's unfortunately just a reality of healthcare. But I think, you know, if we didn't spend so much money paying, for example, an office staff to do all of our prior authorizations, we might have the money to have an office staff member who could help patients with some of these things. So it's physicians organizations that need to advocate for what patients actually need, not kind of go in this circle with healthcare companies where there's more restrictions and then games are played and more restrictions. So we need to get out of that loop.
Absolutely. It's a lot of buzz right now also around machine learning and artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Do you think any of this aspect could be changed, or what's your intake on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a really powerful role for machine learning, for chatbots, not necessarily for, I've seen articles where it's, you know, chatbot diagnosis patient. Okay. I mean, there's definitely perhaps a role for that in the future, but I think right now there are far simpler things that machine learning could help us with. And for example, you know, I was saying that I don't understand all the policies of all the insurance companies I work with, but what if there were a ChatGPT that you could ask a question about what medicine's covered for this patient? What do I need to do to get this covered? What service is covered by this other insurance? So that I wasn't spending time Googling these things, making phone calls. If some of this system complexity could be handled by machine learning, and we could get buy-in from physician societies and also from insurance companies, that would be really, really powerful. I think that would actually cut system costs and it would help everyone, but it involves buy-in from everyone.
That is a very important topic, because obviously people think that, you know, machines or artificial intelligence will displace and there may be some specialty. But there are also a lot of new jobs could be created and maybe some eliminated, and we actually could have more cost-efficient patient care. So with that, is anything you would like to share with the audience from the bottom of your heart?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd just like the audience to know that not every doctor is perfect, but I think most of your physicians are there to help you. They want to help you. But I think sometimes when you see us frustrated, distracted, know that a lot of the part of providing care for you is dealing with these health insurance companies, dealing with the paperwork, so you don't have to. And that takes a toll on us. We need to do a better job of telling patients why we're feeling the way we're feeling, honestly, so that they can be part of that solution. But work with us, give us a chance. And if you have questions about your health insurance, if something's not right, bring it to our attention, because, you know, physicians are not educated on doing billing. We often don't even do the billing. So there are errors all the time. We didn't do it on purpose, and we don't want you having that extra surprise bill. So let us know. We need an open line of communication both ways.
And thank you, Dr. Adler, for such a valuable input and being patient advocate, and actually how you describe the case and communicate with insurance and how the audience can reach out to you.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram under Lowell Pain Center, on LinkedIn, or at our website, which is http://lowellpaincenter.com.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. And everyone, please reach out to Dr. Alexandra Adler, and we will have also additional information. And thank you so much for being with us on the Dr. Connect show.
Thank you, Dr. Schaefer. It was wonderful talking to you.
Thank you for being with us on the Doctor Connect show. If you are interested where your passion and expertise align, go to the website, thedoctorconnect.com, and take an assessment. And remember, it's your, what I call, organic bravery that helps daily decisions and push you to be a better person and make a real difference. So ask yourself, where do you incorporate your hobbies, passion into your professional life and expertise? And remember, keep learning, stay brave, and we'll see you next time on the Doctor Connect show.
Thanks for listening to the Doctor Connect podcast, where we bring you new episodes 2 times every month. Is your passion and expertise aligned? Take the proprietary brand assessment to help you discover where you are and what actions you need to take to align your passion and expertise to enhance your career, legacy, and bring revenue. It only takes 5 minutes and could have a huge impact on your life. If you like what you heard today, reach out, leave a comment or a review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to share the Doctor Connect with your network so others can benefit too. You can also join Dr. Schaefer on her television show on ABC 15. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show or have a question for Dr. Schaefer, send an email to info@thedoctorconnect.com or visit the website, thedoctorconnect.com. Until next time, thanks for listening to The Doctor Connect.